It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, Governor Tony Evers and Foxconn Chairman Terry Goh met for the first time yesterday. We'll find out what we know about that meeting and what it means for the future of the Foxconn project. First, do you have a drawer in your kitchen that's full of culinary gadgets and tools? Some you actually use, others you haven't touched in years, except to get them out of the way of the other stuff that you need. The folks at America's Test Kitchen put these items through their paces to determine which ones are worth the investment and which ones are more trouble than they're worth. Remember the slap chop?
Now look, here's a potato. One slap, you got big chunks for stews. Two slaps, home fries in a second. And look at this. But you add a mushroom, the more you do it, the finer it gets. You don't have to switch any blades.
Big fans of the Slap Chop commercial here, anyway. In this week's edition of Food Friday, we're going to find out which tools we should definitely have in our kitchens, which ones are nice but not necessarily essential, and which ones we should just leave alone. Hannah Crowley is the executive editor of Tastings and Testings at America's Test Kitchen. Hannah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Hannah, I imagine there's a gadget for pretty much everything, but it's easy to go over the top, right? We don't need all the stuff that's out there.
No, you definitely don't need everything.
So how many gadgets would you say have been tested over the years by America's Test Kitchen?
Oh, my gosh. 1,000, maybe, somewhere around there.
Now, what is your favorite tool, the thing you use and maybe cherish more than any other in the kitchen?
Oh, gosh, that's like asking me to pick a favorite child.
Yeah, we'll ask you that next.
I have a very close relationship with my Dutch oven, so a big cast iron pot. You can just do so many things in them that even though it weighs like 15 pounds, I still lug it out almost every day.
Yeah, what are some of the things you use that for on a regular basis?
Well, because it's got that thick cast iron design. You can sear anything in it. It retains heat really well. You can deep fry in it. I'm a big fan of deep fried food. And then you can do soups and stews and pastas. And usually, I don't know if you've seen one of these, they're usually enameled on all bright colors, or they're cast iron. So they're good looking. So you can also put them right on the table, which is great.
And you talk about making soups and sauteing stuff in them. And that's a problem I have if I have a less thick soup pot. It'll get really hot in one place and burn the onions over here and not cook them on the other side. It's really uneven. The thing about the Dutch oven, right, is that it heats evenly. So you're really cooking everything evenly. Or that's the experience I've had anyway. Is that what you get?
Yeah, definitely. Evenly and slower, too. I don't know about you, but for better or for worse, I'm often multitasking when I'm cooking. So if you have a thinner pot, you turn around to do something else, and then your onions are burnt.
So big picture, what do you think is the biggest mistake people make when it comes to deciding whether or not they need a new kitchen gizmo of some sort?
I would say take a close, deep look inside your soul and decide if you're really going to use it. You know, you might see like a trendy new item like an air fryer or a instant pot / multi-cooker device, and it may seem really cool, but you need to think about yourself, not just like, is it a cool idea? Think about like, will I actually use this in my life?
Now, you're with America's Test Kitchen. I'm guessing you're pretty savvy, but is there something you've ever bought that you're like a couple years later, like, why? Why did I get that again?
Oh, my gosh. So many things. I would say, so I got married like 6 or 7 years ago, and I registered completely wrong. I registered for the person I think I wanted to be, or I thought I should be. I registered for everything for baking, everything for this, everything for that, all these things that I thought a kitchen should have, but not what I needed and what I would actually use in my kitchen. And guess where all that stuff is right now?
in my basement. We're talking to Hannah Crowley from America's Test Kitchen about kitchen gadgets and tools, what we need, what we want, what we can do without. And Hannah, you whipped up a list for us, and this is fantastic. Gadgets that you highly recommend, ones that are decent to have, ones we can steer clear of. If anybody, by the way, is about to register for kitchen goods, say if you're getting married, this would be a lovely list to have. WPR.org/Food Friday is where you can find that. You've got a lot of the basics there, and you say one of them, a good 8-inch chef's knife. I want to key in on that good word. How do we pick out a good basic chef's knife?
It's all about how it feels in your hand. You definitely want to make sure, well, I shouldn't say make sure. Every so much of ordering is online now. But you want to think about the handle. We look at something called affordability, which means we like big, comfortable, grippy handles that afford you a couple different ways to hold them. Sometimes handles have weird rivets or ridges that can be painful with repetitive motion, which is really what cutting is. And then sharpness. This is the thing. You want to make sure we tend to like 15-degree edges, which means they're sharpened to 15 degrees on either side. This is a little bit narrower than the classic German knives, which were typically 20 degrees on either side. So I would look for a 15-degree knife. We like the Victorinox Fibrox 8-inch chef's knife. It's like $40, I think. So it's really reasonable, and it's a great all-around knife.
I got, speaking of weddings, a knife set when we got married, and I've got to say probably 70% of my knifeage has been with the chef's knife. That was the key part of that. Are there other key knives that we want to have around for sure?
Yeah, so we say the top three are chef's knife, a paring knife, and a bread knife. And the reason we say a paring knife and a bread knife, paring knife is that short blade is really good for detail work when you need to get in real close and the chef's knife is just too long. And a bread knife is really good because it's got that serrated edge, so you can really get down into crusty things. So those three are the top. And then from there, you can expand out into, depending on your interests. You know, if you eat a lot of meat, maybe a cleaver or a boning knife. If you're into veggies, maybe a vegetable cleaver. If you do a lot of big roasts, maybe a slicing knife. Knives are really fun.
And then let's move on to something less pointy, a whisk. And is there a particular kind of whisk? I feel like I've had good and bad whisks, like ones that you try to stir, I don't know, pancake batter, and they kind of smoosh up and don't accomplish anything for you. And I've had better ones. How do we pick out a good whisk?
Yeah, we like what they're called slim whisks. You know, some of them are balloon whisks. They're just too big.
Yeah.
And another thing we look at is balance. So I don't know if you've ever had this. Like you have a whisk sitting in the bowl and then it flips over backwards and flings your batter everywhere. So
you know,
we like.
I have had that.
Handles.
And I feel like the guy in the commercial, like there's got to be a better way, but there is
exactly.
A better way.
Exactly. And also I'd like to give a shout out to my favorite product, which is a mini whisk. Have you ever used one of those things?
I have not. No.
It's like it's one of my quote unquote essentials. It's totally unessential, but I'm in love with mine. It's great for like whisking vinaigrettes or getting into the corners of pans. They're awesome little things.
Now let's get into an item that I don't have in my repertoire. You say a digital scale is close to must have in your estimation. I don't really bake. I don't do that kind of precise baking. If I don't bake, do I need a digital scale?
I would say not as much as someone who bakes, but you'd still find it useful.
Okay, but
do you drink coffee?
Well, yes, frequently, early and often.
If you're gonna, you can get serious about coffee and weigh your beans, so you could use it for that. And it's really good for recipes, like you know, if it calls for 6 ounces of rice noodles or things like that, you're often left if you buy a 12-ounce bag, you're like, well, shoot. What is, you know, I need to get 6 ounces out of this. So it's really helpful in that way. But I would say that baking is really the primary reason we say you almost need one of those.
Yeah, I've talked to bakers on Food Friday many times, and they say, yeah, don't measure your flour and stuff by volume. You got to weigh it, right?
Yeah, it's just so much easier and tidier.
We're talking about kitchen gadgets, the good, the bad, and the ugly, with Hannah Crowley, executive editor of Tastings and Testings at America's Test Kitchen. Hannah put together this great list of gadgets and sorted them into must-haves, nice-to-haves, and don't waste your money on. We posted that list at wpr.org/foodfriday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your go-to kitchen tools, gadgets, and gizmos? Do you have a big drawer of utensils that you never use? Do you have a regret, the thing you bought and just wasted your money on? And do you have kind of an obscure thing that you do use a lot because of something really specific that you cook a lot? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.
And I happen to love beef jerky. And you know how darn expensive beef jerky is today?
Terrible. Through the roof.
You go out and I bought this yesterday. $2.29 for 1 ounce of beef jerky.
There's nothing in there.
That's about $36 a pound. And with the Ronco Electric Food Dehydrator, you can make your homemade beef jerky for just around $3 a pound.
Another Ideas Network favorite there. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the best and worst in kitchen gadgetry with Hannah Crowley, executive editor of Tastings and Testings at America's Test Kitchen. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite tool in your kitchen? And have you ever gotten something that proved to be a total bust? You thought you'd use it, you used it once, and then on the shelf it sits. And do you have a utensil or gadget that's been in your family for generations? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to our callers now. We've got Bill on the line in Deerfield. Bill, hi.
Hey, thank you. So I love America's Test Kitchen. Got a lot of the books. Can't say all the books, but I've got a bunch of the books. And I love the equipment sections on the show. They're really helpful. Saved a lot of money because of that segment. But I have to say that I do a lot of baking, and the digital scale is super important. But just for general cooking, the ThermoPen is an absolute must-have.
Bill, I'm right there with you. I don't know what brand I have, but an instant digital thermometer. I didn't used to do it, so I would just overcook my meat because I was so paranoid. Could you talk about picking out a great instant read thermometer, Hannah?
Yeah, well, I think you have the key right there. It's got to be a digital instant read. There are a lot of dial style, old face ones, and it's a different kind of technology, and it's too slow. You know, your steak can get overcooked while you're waiting for the thing to come up to temperature. Another thing we like is the jackknife style. Like the ThermoPen has the probe folds out, and that gives you this ability to be a little further away from the heat, and that offset angle is a little more comfortable to look at. The ThermoPen really is the Cadillac of instant read thermometers. You know, the new ones, they go to sleep and then they turn on when you pick them back up again. They swivel, the digits rotate, so good for lefties and righties. They've got a light on them if you're a griller.
I like that idea of one you can be further away from, because sometimes I do try to measure the temperature while a thing's on the grill. And in the meantime, my hand is slowly getting up to a well-cooked temperature too. Like, how much distance is that one giving me?
I would say maybe like 10 inches, no,
okay.
8-9 inches or so.
That's still better than the 3 inches that are that my thermometer has. Thanks a lot, Bill, for that call. It's a great idea at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Cara now in Delafield. Cara, hi.
Hi. I was just going to say that my favorite go-to gadget in the kitchen all the time is my garlic mincer, because you just put it in a little gadget and press the two handles, and it keeps your hands really clean and saves the time of having to mince it all up.
Kara, thanks. What do you think? Is that a necessity, Hannah?
I would absolutely agree. Mine actually almost changed my life. That maybe sounds a little dramatic, but there's something about peeling garlic skins and dealing with garlic skins that actually gives me a chill. So it's a weird tick I have. And so when I got a garlic press, and it made my life better, which is, I think, really the gold medal gadget, if it can actually make your life better.
Thank you for that. Now, I'll say I actually like skinning and cutting up garlic, and I used to use garlic presses, maybe I didn't pay enough for them. They kept breaking for me. So, like, heck with it. I'm just going to use my 8-inch kitchen knife, smoosh it, cut it up, and I kind of like, the next day my hands, no matter how much you wash them, still smell like garlic. I'm like, oh, it's a reminder that fun cooking I did yesterday.
Well, that's a nice perfume, I guess.
I'm not trying to impress anybody. Thanks a lot for that call. Let's go to Emily now in Milwaukee. Emily, hi.
Hi. I actually agree about chopping garlic. I think it's very therapeutic, especially with your big kitchen knife. So I have to say, I'm with you on that.
Sweet.
So the gadget, I don't know if it's so much a gadget, but I mean a good Dutch oven, right? Because it's just stove to oven, and you can take it camping. You can do chili and soup and roast and anything you can think of. I have a cast iron, which I just love cast iron. Of course, you got to be good about seasoning it, but I'm all about that. Gotta have it. Can't live without it.
Emily, thanks. Let's talk about cast iron a little bit, whether we're talking Dutch ovens or just pans. Hannah, is it important to have some of those in our collection?
They're great for searing. They do require some maintenance, and they are heavy. So it's really a personal choice. If you are willing to lift them and do that little bit of care, there's a big reward there. And Emily said a great point about Dutch ovens that I didn't say earlier, the stove to oven to grill to campfire capability. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I like that with cast iron pans. I just grilled asparagus the other day. It was really thin asparagus, so you couldn't skewer it. I just had it in the cast iron skillet in the grill, and it did a great job. Thanks a lot for that call, Emily. We heard from Peter on Facebook, who just writes, fish turner. And that might be the same thing. You have fish spatula is on your list, and you say it's handy for more than just fish. What's a fish spatula?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So they're kind of, all right, I'm going to be terrible at describing the shape. They're a little more triangular-ish. They're longer and they're tapered, unlike the sort of square shape of a regular spatula. And they have that shape so they can get under a long fish fillet. And they often have a little turn up at the end so they can nudge their nose right under. And we actually use them for everything instead of a normal spatula. If you notice, the handle on a regular spatula is pretty long, which puts you really far away from the thing you're so carefully trying to control. We like fish spatulas because they get you really nice control right up close to the food, and they have that long runway, so things don't flop off. You have a little more of a landing strip there for your food.
Now, a problem I have sometimes with pancakes or other stuff I want to flip is, my spatula doesn't go right under it. I smoosh it up to the edge of the pan until it stops.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can get the spatula under it. Is my fish spatula going to help me not have to do that?
Totally. But a good one. You have to make sure. We actually brought out the calipers when we tested these things.
Wow.
And made sure that our winner had a super thin edge so it could really get under things. Sometimes these things are so thick that you're just like a battering ram going around the pan.
We're talking to Hannah Crowley, executive editor of Tastings and Testings at America's Test Kitchen, getting advice on kitchen tools and gadgets, which ones we want, which ones we need, which ones we can steer clear of. Hannah gave us this great list. It's at WPR.org/Food Friday. She assigns many kitchen tools into those very three categories. Let's go to another caller now. We've got Jim with us in Watertown. Jim, hi.
Hello. Go-to is the plastic flexible dough knife. It's kind of like a half circle, kind of, but it works for getting anything out of any bowl, sticky or not.
Dough knife. Okay. Was that on your list, Hannah?
No. And this is interesting. I don't have any experience with them, but my coworker is obsessed with hers. And I think this brings up a really interesting point that, one person's essential is another person's, they've never heard of it. So I love when people have these things they feel so passionate about. And I think the dough thing can be really good for working the dough around in the bowl and then scooting it all out in one fell swoop. So I've heard they can be really useful.
Thanks a lot for that call. Going out to Mike in Burlington. Mike, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Mike? What gadget?
Our Instapot. Pressure cooker, a fantastic device since they came out. Cooks fast, a lot of flavor in the food, tender.
All right. Mike, thanks a lot for that call. I want to get a countervailing opinion. Stand by, Hannah. We've got Ted in Madison. Ted, hi.
Hi. I was actually calling about the opposite of the Instapot. We had a divided household opinion on that, and I am a classic culinarian and I feel that time is an important factor when developing flavors in food, and I lost out on the decision to not purchase the Instapot, and it was purchased, and I haven't been happy with the flavor profiles of the food that was created in the Instapot.
There's our point counterpoint, Hannah. Instapot, hot or not?
I say hot for the pressure cooking function, not for the slow cooking function. And I wonder with the second caller, I wonder if they're using the slow cooking function or the pressure cooking function, because the cool thing about pressure is it's contained. It just means the pot seals itself super tightly. So none of the steam escaping takes like flavor with it. You can smell it. That's flavor actually going off in the air. So it really keeps everything contained and cooks it right in its own juices. So it can make incredibly flavorful food. But these pots, they also have saute functions. And I would really tell people to use the saute function, because if you're browning your onions beforehand, if you're cooking your garlic a little bit, you're going to develop the flavor a little bit. And then once you put on that top and seal it and cook it under pressure, it can be just beautiful. I actually made mussels in mine last night, which sounds really weird. They only cook for 1 minute under pressure. And, you know, have you ever cooked mussels on the stove and some open and some don't and some open part of the way? The Instant Pot can actually make them all open perfectly.
Wow. All right. Thanks for the Instant Pot calls. Time for one more caller. Fred is with us in La Crosse. Fred, hi.
Hi there. I'm not a complainer by nature, although my wife might disagree. two things I've had trouble with. One was I'm a lefty, so serrated knives drive me crazy. You know, because they've got the serration on the other end. And the other thing is that several years ago, I bought a yellow one and a green one. They were like squeezer handles with that you would go and juice limes and lemons. And I had them for a couple of years before I realized that they both were exactly the same size. one was yellow and one was painted yellow and one was painted green.
Love it, Fred. Thank you so much. So maybe on that knife issue, Hannah, do people make left-handed serrated knives?
They do. They do have them. I tested serrated knives, and I had a bunch of lefties use our winner, and they didn't have a problem with it. They felt like it still drove pretty straight for them. So I wonder, first of all, if maybe it's not the fact that he's a lefty, but that it wasn't a good serrated knife.
Oh,
but,
maybe.
I could be wrong there. We're actually looking into testing more lefty-centric products this year. So maybe I'll have a better answer for him then.
Help is on the way, Fred. And Hannah, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. We'll have to do this again.
I'd love to. Thanks for having me.
That's Hannah Crowley, Executive Editor of Tastings and Testings at America's Test Kitchen. We talked with her about kitchen gadgets and tools from the absolutely must-haves to the don't waste your money on. We've got a bunch of her recommendations posted at WPR.org/Food Friday. You can keep the conversation going on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us about your go-to kitchen tools and why they work so well for you. Or tell us about the thing you bought and never, ever used.